For December the 16th, 2022, we talk about The Devil in Me, Marvel's Midnight Suns, Gungrave Gore, and much more. Welcome to Level 439. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Jella Prendes.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, Jella.
Surprise! Nobody, including I, knew that I was going to be here.
Yeah, it was a last-minute substitution. David tapped out, and you were kind enough to tap in.
Surprise! Yay! So here I am, unprepared. And not, but no, I'm always prepared, but like, I just don't have a news story. Is
yeah, that's fine.
Just are off the cuff.
And only because I was like, you know what? Nobody else has a news story when they come last minute or they're unprepared for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. I can have no news story this time for the first time ever.
Yeah. So let some balls drop.
It is.
Why'd you have to go there?
That's kind of, you're the one who said it. Oh man. So how are you doing besides completely busy and tired and stuff?
Well, I've been trying to, aside from just like the usual run of the mill, work and home life and holidays stuff. It's also trying to get ready for the wedding. So that's coming up in mid-January. So, we had to do some running around. Dave had to go get his outfit. I already had mine. It's ironic because my outfit was less expensive, inclusive of the citrine and ruby jewelry that I bought for it, than Dave's outfit. So, damn. I still have to get the top altered because these guns cannot be contained in this this very beautiful choli top that goes with like a lenghai and like a separate skirt piece. The armholes are not big enough to contain my lats and my arms. So I have to go get that altered, but luckily there is some fabric in there. I also made my bouquet and boutonnieres for the fellas. So I've been busy in the last several days trying to do all of that stuff and trying to like get the episodes of Jolly Chan's Place recorded ahead of time so that everything releases still.
Yeah, that sounds like an awful lot to worry about in addition to like Christmas and year end stuff. Like, I know your work gets real busy at the end of a month too.
Well, there's that, and also like with the integration of our systems and stuff at work, it's just like it's going to be hectic and horrible at work, and I'm going to be working over for like probably the next year.
Yeah. So,
hooray.
Huh. Well,
but so it goes.
No.
Everybody else doing.
I've just been getting ready for Duckstream. There's a lot. They're just to prep and tech stuff. I've got all those mods and stuff that I'm trying to get going. You know, in addition to the Resident Evil ones, I've got a few other randomizer mods that I think are going to be some crowd pleasers. Let's say,
yay,
yeah. But and also, you know, trying to put in stuff that we might be able to do during our multiplayer kind of deal here, getting that figured out. In addition to, you know, OBS layouts and scenes and getting my studio room ready and getting the cat cam ready and all of that. It's a production, you know.
Yeah,
you got two cats though.
Yeah, it's like herding cats.
Streaming has really like developed over time from when you guys started.
It really has, yeah. And it's kind of an arms race between me and Nick because Nick is wild at it over in the Portland kind of place. Well, he's technically minded, and I kind of am not. So it's just one of those things where he does real cool stuff, and I want to do real cool stuff too. So But yeah, that's all that I've got. Duckstream, 9 p.m. Friday tonight, as people are listening to 9 p.m. Sunday. Duckfeed.tv/Duckstream, raising money to support the Transactive Gender Project. This is the 9th year.
Yeah.
The 9th year of raising funds for that particular cause. It's one of those things where it's kind of like traveling, or like, you know, doing like a convention or whatever. It's a whole lot of worry and fret and effort and like at the start, and then once it actually, you know, or, you know, in the lead up, and then once you're actually there, once it's actually going, it's like, oh yeah, no, this is fun, this is good. Mm-hmm. And then you're super relieved when it's over. Oh man, how about you, Dennis?
I'm good. I just got back from going to the Festival of Lights at the Cincinnati Zoo.
Ooh, fun.
That was a real, real good time. My favorite addition that I don't think they've had in previous years is there's a walkway. This is the Cincinnati Zoo. They, you know, during Christmas season, string up everything in Christmas lights. You can walk around in it. But there was a pathway that had a bunch of giant jellyfish strung over it. That changed colors.
Those poor fish. Oh my God.
Giant paper mache jellyfish, I should say. But yeah, made for some really cool walk-in, and like, I'm a nerd for aquariums. And jellyfish are probably my favorite thing to see just cause they're so alien. So it was like a nice little, you know, Lovecraftian horror treat in the middle of my Christmas display.
Nice.
Yeah.
I mean, I have yet to meet a person who's not like, oh yeah, I'd fuck up an aquarium right now. Yeah. I don't know if that's just because I associate solely with real cool people, but yeah, no, if I had an aquarium nearby, I'd be like, hey, you want to go there?
Yeah,
sure.
There's literally never a time where I would feel like that is inappropriate.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really mourning grandma's death. You know, I'd go watch the octopi and think about how we all have an intelligence to ourselves and are so flexible.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I mean, you can go to the Newport Aquarium down there. I love their penguin tank. And you just sit, last time I was there with my little niece, we sat there for like an hour just watching them go. Like, look at them go. Yeah. Well, that's
cool. It's like a sitcom. So the other thing is that Deck of Wonders has started shipping in the EU. So woohoo! Yeah,
it's going fantastic.
By the time people are listening to this, it is probably in backers' hands, at least in that corner of the world, and everything else should be close behind. So, yeah, that exciting.
Rules. Yeah.
Exciting.
I mean, is there some measure? I mean, obviously, Kickstarter backers are patient to a fault. Is there some satisfaction in getting this out and to people by the end of the year?
Yeah, I think in my head I was like, I want it to be in people's hands for Christmas.
Yeah,
if at all possible, and so that feels really good, and then, you know, the new year is a good time to have the hype machine spinning for a game.
Mm-hmm.
Sales of new games spike around that time, so I think it's all coming up. Furia Games.
That rules.
I probably the best piece of promotion, I don't know if we've talked about it on the level, Jala, I think you've mentioned it, is I got to go on Jala's place, mm-hmm. and talk it up.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. So that was a lot of fun. Wide-ranging interview and all things Deck of Wonders.
So what I can't get over, and I think it's hilarious, is that every single time, like, the show is called Jalachan's Place. It's at jalachan.place. But every single time all of you guys say it, you're like, Jala's Place. Like, you just
Jala's Jala's Place.
And it's like, it's not Jala.place. It's Jalachan.place.
I mean, I need to then start referencing you in just normal conversation as Jalachan. It will not feel right unless I do that.
I apologize if I have ever misspoken that. My excuse is the same.
I know. I just think it's very funny because it's like, hopefully people aren't going to like Jala.place because it's not there. It's Jalachan.place. But yeah, I mentioned that when I was on and you were off having your fun vacation time because I popped up on that episode. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I brought it up at that point. Also, another network host, Will Hughes, is going to be on the next episode.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, talking about Agatha Christie, Poirot, and Murder on the Orient Express.
Yeah.
That drops on the 23rd of December. But anyway, I was about to pop up and say, Dennis, this means that maybe when things kind of calm down slightly for me, I can I can play the card game because I will have a copy theoretically.
So it'll be perfectly timed. That'll be in your hands when you have time to play it.
Yes.
Mm. Nice. Yeah. Have you recorded the Will one yet?
Yes, it's already recorded.
Yeah, he's a very nice guy. When you don't have the kind of the kayfabe of the combativeness with Gary, it's really fun being on the air with both of them. But it is also a lot. So nice. Ben, how about you? What's going on?
Yeah, it was just not a whole lot slapping for me, but there's a lot happening in the world right now. There was a chess boxing event over the weekend. There's a speed chess tournament going on online for the next couple of days. The World Cup's going on.
Oh, yeah.
And one cool thing I did this past weekend is I went to a theater that's like kind of like an art house theater in Seattle and saw a movie called The Visitor, which is a 1979 movie, which is very, very good. Very, very Neil Breenian, but just this awesome Italian science fiction movie.
Yes, that helps me understand more the vibe of this movie.
For the people who get it will get it, and the people who don't get it, it's fine.
I don't understand.
I-Y-K.
I don't understand the juxtaposition of very good and Neil Breenian. How fateful are the findings, Ben?
Yeah. I mean, this was a simpler time. This is back in the 70s. Was it John Huston, the famous like American director from back in the day?
Yeah.
He's one of the main stars in this movie. And there's just a groovy bass line played anytime he's on screen. And, yeah, I don't know. Look up the synopsis for this movie. If you're interested in like, shitty, but good movies. It's a feast for the senses.
It's really weird how John Huston just started acting and stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, because like, oh yeah, I'm gonna make the Maltese Falcon, and then come the 70s, yeah, sure, I'll be in Chinatown.
Yeah.
Oh gosh, well, that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, I think we should get into the body of the show. What with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss, and we can get started with.
The grind,
where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Looking at our fancy new doodad, I have something new, so I'm going to talk about it, though I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it because I haven't finished it, but I do have thoughts. This past weekend, I streamed the new, so it is the fourth of the Dark Pictures anthology games. This is from the same people who did The Quarry, Until Dawn, and then like Man of Medan, House of Ashes, Little Hope, interactive cinematic adventure game kind of deals that emphasize choice. Go ahead.
How is it? Because like I didn't watch your stream because I was like,
oh, you want to play it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Oh, okay.
It's a real step back.
Oh.
Yeah.
How so?
Technologically, it's not gonna measure up to The Quarry because it needs to work on older systems. And there's just a very obviously a lot fewer resources going into it, you know? So like, I don't care about, you know, character model reuse. Some people do, but it happens there. Like loading screens, on camera, transition kind of things, you know, on camera cuts, stuttering, lots of just slop all around. I generally don't care. I'm generally pretty, you know, pro jank actually. And it's fun to laugh at, but also it's just not, I don't know. Maybe in something this cinematic, it like puts a damper on it. I guess what I'm trying to say is, if I'm picking on it, you know it's bad.
Which means if I were to play it, I'd be like, "Ah, oh, guys, yeah,
yeah." Maybe who knows? Like maybe. The subject matter and stuff would carry you through.
Yeah,
you know, could be. Got no way. The other way in which it's, you know, kind of down. This is more substantial. Good.
I'm curious if they have like a team breakdown where it's like one team works on the dark picture stuff and then other teams worked on the longer games like The Quarry and Until Dawn.
But if I were to guess, and this is me speaking, to take this for what it's worth, or, you know, which is nothing. But what I would say is like the big team, the A team and stuff, it was all hands on deck to like create the tools to make the Dark Pictures anthology, saying like, all right, like we're going to get the technology down and we're going to, you know, get this first one, maybe this first couple through planning. And then that team, or like the heavy hitters among them, you know, like I think they got Larry Fessenden back to write on it, and just big stuff like the Until Dawn team. Those folks went and started working on The Quarry, whereas the second stringers started working on the later Dark Picture stuff, which was fine for House of Ashes because like that had a cool premise and like it was a reach for them. So like that kind of carried it through. In this one, speaking of the premise stuff, and then I'll talk about the gameplay hangups that I have. It's the only one of these so far that has concerned itself with like a basis in a real life kind of event. So it opens like back in the 1920s, I think, in Chicago, around the time of the World's Fair. I mean, maybe it was like 1903. Regardless, Chicago World Fair, early 20th century. With this couple, you're playing as this couple who goes into a hotel, the World's Fair Motel, which is dun dun dun, owned and operated by the infamous serial killer H.H. Holmes. Big guy, bowler hat, weird mustache. Lots of myths about him. I think they like the people say he killed hundreds, but he only confessed to 27. Considered to be like the first serial killer or whatever. And when you do the time skip and go forward, you are playing as like your crew of characters. You're playing as this kind of members of this down and out production team that does like a series of like news documentary package kind of things, like a Dateline almost, about, you know, serial killers and stuff, who you have been invited to like this person who decided to recreate the murder hotel of H.H. Holmes. You know, so they're there to get footage, interview the proprietor, stuff like that. It's their last big shot. And of course people start dying, because, oh no, the fake murder hotel can also function as a real murder hotel.
Yeah. Like, as somebody who read Devil in the White City and dug that, and, you know, also has read other stuff, about that same original premise of like the actual thing that happened with H.H. Holmes, mm-hmm. like that subject matter is interesting to me. So
yeah, I'm not down on it. Like there's cool stuff that they can do with it. And admittedly, this is where the I haven't finished it thing fits in, mm-hmm. which is like I haven't seen the twist that they're going to go for. The way that it articulates is this is the first Saw game since the Saw 2 Puzzle of Flesh. No, Puzzle of Flesh was Phantasmagoria. It works out like a jigsaw kind of thing, mm-hmm. where, you know, the death traps are like designed for a particular person. And then other people are left helpless and trying to help them kind of deal, which compared to stuff that they had done before, especially House of Ashes, which was like, you know, I don't want to spoil too much of anything, but like it was explicitly supernatural, you know, like that was a bigger swing that I was like way more on board with than something that is kind of more mundane. But that's a genre preference, right? Yeah. Mechanically, you know, these games don't have to be any great shakes. You know, you're moving your characters around, you're looking for stuff in the environment, you react to it, but the majority of the action takes place in the dialogue, where you are making choices under a time limit and kind of choosing the way people interact with each other. In this one, kind of the notion of team cohesion is a bigger thing, which is really hard because, like, the director is this real prima donna, like, British asshole kind of guy. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of impossible. Like, this is the first of these characters where, like, my dislike of him has gotten in the way, and I've been somebody who is not, like, really bothered by like, say, Until Dawn or The Quarry. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the assholes that are that are in some of those games. The bigger deal is that they have attempted to add a little bit more, for lack of a better word, action into it. And by action, I mean kind of platforming, but they've just kind of made a bunch of mantling that you end up doing. So imagine, like, an Uncharted game, but without Naughty Dog's, like, fine-tuned kind of thing, where, like, you know, where that can feel good and you're trying to figure out where your next, you know, handhold would be in an Uncharted game. In this one, it's like, okay, well, the first hour and a half is going to be getting to this hotel, and a lot of it's going to be walking up to the edge of a cliff and pressing a button to, like, hoist yourself up. Mm-hmm. If this was a parody of that kind of game where, like, climbing is what you do and you're just kind of pressing a direction and it looks pretty when you do it, that would be very funny to me. As it stands, it feels wicked padded.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So as far as I can tell, things are speeding up a little bit once I am deeper into the hotel kind of deal. But that leaves kind of a nasty taste in my mouth. Something that is a little bit... Oh, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, it's also weird that they released it the same year that The Quarry came out, because it seems like they're kind of competing with themselves. Like, I'm surprised they didn't hold it for next year.
Yeah, I think that they were so committed. They were so committed to a yearly schedule kind of thing on the Dark Pictures anthology. And this obviously had, like, trouble. Like, these have always come out before Halloween, and this one came out, like, mid-November. So I believe it got a delay. I think that, like, they, in their minds, it was kind of like, okay, one of these is the big feature movie and the other is our, like, TV series kind of deal. You know, how like the Marvel kind of thing where, you know, the studio can put out both things at the same time kind of deal. Mm-hmm. You're right. It's a weird fit for video games.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing mechanically that's a little bit more successful is each character kind of has their own little inventory item, and you can pick up, you know, some inventory things, but, like, the sound person has a portable recorder, and oftentimes, like, in dark hallways, you use that to, like, navigate towards, you know, trying to find people, things like that. You know, the lighting person has a flashlight, whereas other people rely on lighters. One of the people has asthma. And so, like, a choice that you're making is, you know, you have a finite number of hits off of their inhaler. Hits. I have no idea. Pulls. okay. So do you trust that they can get through the situation where they're panicking or it's dusty without using the emergency inhaler? And then, like, when you run out, you know, is that going to get you killed? At one of these points.
Finally, some accurate representations of asthma in video games. Guess I'm going to die now.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'll just die. Yeah.
Do diabetes next. Oh, apocalypse. Whoop, fuck me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, just capitalism. Oh, it's $700 for a vial. Yeah. Okay, cool. All right. Anyway. Yeah. So, like, I appreciate that they're taking some, attempts to evolve it. You know, something that is yearly release could just be, they could just keep it mechanically where it was at with Man of Medan. I just think that doesn't work well with the resources that they have available for fit and finish kind of stuff. So, like, I'm disappointed because I really wanted to dig this, but yeah, it's just a bummer.
Yeah, it's because it's like they have good talent in the games, and there's like a decent, there's a good production on it, but it's just like it doesn't stick the landing, it seems.
Yeah. Oh gosh, I forget the name of the, each of these has a big actor, you know, like just like one big name. And who is this? The Devil in Me.
Is the one of the lead actresses.
Yes, Jessie Buckley plays one of them. And her character is fine. She, you know, like she ends up being kind of the, at least cast as the main character. Obviously, anybody can die, so you know she may end up falling to the back. But it is kind of funny because I can't tell if she's trying to mask her accent, and if she, or if this is just her. I don't know. Her accent comes across weird. She's Irish, and a lot of what she says is Irish, but when it comes time for her to say ass, she really hits it in an American way. Ass.
Oh, no.
You know? So
she's a very good actress. Like, she's in Men and I'm Thinking of Ending Things, and it's great in both of those. So I imagine it's either not enough production time and they're just like, one take, sure, that's good enough. Or yeah. I don't know. Or they're just like, yeah, this could be any nationality character.
Yeah, poor direction, or you know, could be somebody living in you know, somebody from Ireland who's living in America for a long time. It feels strange. I like her. The thing that I know her from is Chernobyl.
Oh, okay.
That is something funny where like it just very inconsistently sometimes you just okay, Irish. You would only say it that way. Somebody would only direct you to say it that way if they were like, no, remember, you're an American.
It's a British company making the game, too. So.
Yeah.
All right, weird layers.
If you had to pick one word to be said out of accent, though, what would you go with?
I mean, okay, so pick one word.
We can't lose arse. It's just got such a good, I don't know, punch to it, so...
I don't know how to answer this question. I mean, like for identifying, like, you know, at the very least, I would use ass as a sorting mm-hmm. measure. Mm-hmm. God, that can't be a title. Ass as a sorting measure can't be a title.
It can be in a toady, though. Someone write it down.
But so, I don't know. I don't know how to answer this question. I just, if I was trying to test somebody.
If she's like, top of the morning to you.
Well, in that particular phrase, that's weird. I don't know how to answer that question. Yeah. So,
are you going to stream this again next week? Or, well, I guess this coming week. Stream. So,
yeah. It may need to wait until after Christmas. Is the thing. Maybe in the week between Christmas and New Year, I'll pop in. But my this is weird as well. The previous ones I've done in two sessions, and then I looked on how long to beat on this one, and like mysteriously and for seemingly no reason other than the aforementioned padding, this one's like 9 hours long. It's like that's too much for this. That's not this one, not this kind of game, please, no. So. Yeah. Any questions?
How much is this game new?
$40, I think. Something like that.
Okay. Yeah.
Interesting. Previous ones have been 30, so I don't know if they're trying to justify a higher price point by making it longer.
But yeah.
No. Yeah, well. Any other questions about the Devil in Me?
Some weird phrasing, but no.
Yeah. Would you like to query my devil? Oh gosh. Jala, how about you?
Yeah, so since the last time I was on, I've been playing a lot of Pokemon Scarlet. So last time I think I had only beaten one, maybe two gyms, and at this point I finished all the gyms, I finished all the Titans, I have done some of the Starfall guys, like there's the Team Star, which is the Team Rocket analog, and you have to go fight all of them, and I fought 2 out of 5, I think, of those guys. So plugging right along and doing all of that. Something that I was thinking about, because I'm only just starting to engage with some of the systems and things that, you know, like I haven't had a need for, like using TMs and which give your Pokemon different skills. And going through and like recalling skills that your Pokemon forgot in order to learn a new one. Mm-hmm. And some other things like that, like actually looking at the items, maybe actually giving an item to the Pokemon for them to carry. Because like I haven't needed them at all because the game is very, very easy. So a few notes about this one versus Sword and Shield. I will say that as you defeat the different Titans, you basically power up your Pokemon motorcycle and it gets different traversal capacity. So like after you beat one of them, it can go faster. After another one, it can jump and it can jump higher, and then it can glide for a little while. And then in another one, you can climb directly up vertical surfaces, so you can absolutely Skyrim the heck out of it. Yeah. So that's fun. That makes traversal a lot more fun in this one versus Sword and Shield. And you know I like traversal. So mm-hmm. that's a point in its favor. Some of the loading times and things seem to be getting cut down as they are doing patches and stuff on the game. So some of that stuff is starting to be ameliorated. So that's a good thing as well. And as you fill out your Pokedex, like you actually get different items and incentives for catching a larger number of Pokemon, which is also good. And there's like a sliding scale, and like every time you go into your Pokedex, you can kind of like check your rewards. And when I first did it, because I didn't know that was a thing until Dave told me, I went in there and I got all of these goodies, like all of these different special types of Pokeballs and different items. So that was cool. I only just recently, shout out to Fred, my Sherpa, for various random things, learned from Fred about how in the world to make the sandwiches in the picnics, because I had mentioned the picnics that I did one picnic, and now I'm starting to do more picnics because basically I'm running through a bunch of areas with higher level Pokemon than my party by like 15 levels and stuff, and so like I'm actually needing to go and like rest up and recover my Pokemon before continuing on. And so like I had gone up to the table and pushed the button to try, you know, to see if I could interact with the picnic basket on the table previously, but every single time, like no matter what side of the table I was on, it was the wrong side, because you have to be directly in front of the picnic basket specifically, and there isn't like a prompt, like, you know, in Pokemon games especially, there's like a little thing where it says press X to interact or whatever. Like it tells you what it does. Well, it doesn't have that. You have to go up to it and then just know that you need to push the button to make a sandwich and do whatever you need to do. And it's weird because like in Sword and Shield, it was just like on the main menu when you went into the camping is what it was there. You were doing camping and then you could just make a curry. There was a button for it. You didn't have to go up to anything and go, oh, I need to interact with the fire to make the curry or whatever, you know? So it's kind of weird and awkward, but whatever.
That is bizarre for a game in a series that tutorializes so everything. Much.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, and the tutorial thing pops up, but only after you've interacted with the picnic basket to start making your sandwich. So my first sandwich, because I have not sought out any ingredients and purchased them. I just had whatever stuff I randomly picked up from various people on the road that I talked to. Like the first sandwich I made was a pickle sandwich, and I don't like pickles in actual life. And so I was very upset about this because it was whatever, but it gives you bonuses to your XP and to like the rate of items that drop, and you know, if you find Pokemon eggs and all different kinds of stuff. So like it's worth investing in that if you want to try to complete your Pokedex, or if you are trying to gain XP to grind out and make a super team or whatever you're doing, like that is in service to that. But overall, I was sitting here and I was thinking about it, and I'm like, you know, it's sad because there's all these systems and they're all optional because you don't really need it to do most of the battles that you come across in this game. And unless you're like me and specifically going into areas that you're not supposed to be in yet, and, you know, just intentionally going in all the places that, you know, trying to see if the devs will let you actually go there, and promptly running off and, you know, getting myself into trouble. Like, unless you're like that, you don't need to worry about the tactical elements, but there are tactics in the base stuff that keeps on getting brought forward. But because this game is supposed to be like all ages and accessible for everybody, it's there. The legacy stuff is there if you want to dig into it, but there's no need. There's no like, oh, I have to think about this and puzzle my way through and figure out how to do this. You just need to know, is a fire type good against, you know, whatever Pokemon you're up against, like an electric or whatever. So like, it's unfortunate because I kind of wish that there was like a harder version of the game. Like, I wish there was a difficulty setting where you could change it and be like, actually, I want all the Pokemon in the world to have like plus 20 levels or something, you know,
yeah.
Something where it would make it more challenging. Cause even in the raid battles, yeah, those are a little bit harder, but you still have like a full team of people fighting those raid battles with you. And it's less, it feels less tactical because it's not like a long con. It's one fight,
yeah. You know?
So it's kind of unfortunate. Cause like, as much as I like zoning out and playing this game when I get home and just, you know, like derping around in Pokemon Land and what the hell is that thing and going and catching it, you know, that's cool. But at the same time, I'm like, you know, I wish that there was an option for you to dig more deeply into all of the tactical stuff that they have, you know, vestiges of from prior iterations of the game. And I don't know, I haven't played, like, cause until I played Sword and Shield, I had played like Pokemon Red and Blue and Yellow.
Yeah.
I skipped broadly. I touched down on like weirdo titles like Pokemon Puzzle League and Pokemon Stadium. And then I skipped and I didn't play any mainline Pokemon games between the very original ones and Sword and Shield. So I have no idea whether or not any of those titles in between were more tactical and had some of those, you know, like had those elements because they needed them. You know, yeah. I wish it just had more to the gameplay that made it more accessible to people who want to play it on a hard mode, you know?
It's weird because I get so wrapped up in the like, oh, it does, or just by virtue of being in the community, just like, okay, does Dark Souls need a difficulty selector? And it's like, oh, well, that's a complicated question, etc. But like Pokemon, it sounds like absolutely does, especially because of how wide the audience is. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
If like to have the entire thing be tuned for kids, when they know, because they're probably some of the loudest people, that folks who grew up with the games are also playing it, who maybe are ready for something a little bit more difficult, kind of seems like, oh, let people make their own Sunday, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, just set the floor wherever you want, but let me set the ceiling. Just mm-hmm. like, you know, I would say to a very difficult game, you set the ceiling wherever you want, but let me set the floor, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I wish that was an option, because once I'm done wandering around in the story and, you know, all of that mess, I'm going to set it down. But if it had that tactical element, I probably would be returning to the game and playing it a lot more, you know, for a while. And like, granted, I got a lot of mileage out of Sword and Shield, but that was because specifically I was doing the Dynamax rating, not because I was engaging with the entire game, like the whole world in the game and everything. Hmm. Like, so Scarlet Violet have the better traversal, so I like that element. It has more fun traversal. The fact that you can literally just go vertically up the cliff face to the very top of the tallest mountain on the entire continent is pretty baller, you know?
That's a great reinterpretation of the HMs, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the special moves like a fly or swim or anything like that. Like, that's great, you know, but... Yeah.
And that's cool. And it's very cool that, you know, you can go and discover different areas that are maybe not on the beaten path, you know, and I've been having fun wandering around some of those and, you know, just discovering, oh, there's a little cave on the side of this cliff and, you know, it doesn't go anywhere, but there's some stuff in there and there's some Pokemon in there. Cool. You know, and going around and exploring. I love exploring, but again, like I kind of wish that I had more of a need to be tactical to actually use all of these different things that they're giving me, you know? Mm-hmm. So
what's the point of having a million systems like a Pokemon game has if engaging with more than two of them means everything goes by so quickly you don't have to pay attention?
Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask, is there a go-to recommendation for like a pet battler game that does require that?
The game I'm going to talk about this week actually does a lot of similar things that Jala is talking about, but actually I think does a good job of like having them integrated well in the game. But
oh, snap.
It's not pet battlers, though.
And I would say the game that does something kind of similar to, you know, like a Pokemon-ish thing, but has more tactics to it, would be Azure Dreams, that old-ass PlayStation game that comes up on my bingo card every once in a while, and I'm obligated to talk about that every once in a while. That is a game that requires a lot of tactical thinking, and it's, you know, it involves little critters, your familiars that you have, and, you know, evolve as you go up the different levels of this mm-hmm. roguelike tower, but...
Yeah. There's also... Oh gosh, Humble published it. It's a PC game. Came to call Temtem, is what it is. That that came out.
Right.
Yeah,
is that still around? I thought I read something that maybe that got dumped.
I don't think so. I think that they put out a console version of it here relatively recently. I don't know how difficult it is, but just as another, basically, it is another pet battler, and it doesn't sound like anything could be simpler than what Jala is talking about.
Well, and I think it's also. Like, I like Azure Dreams, and I like Digimon Card Battle. Again, that's another old-ass PlayStation 1 game. And it's mimicking the, you know, obviously the Digimon card game, you know, mm-hmm. and it's playing off of that. But it has animated scenes where you are, you know, seeing the Digimon fight each other, and you are going from different locations fighting different people. I don't know if they call what they call them. I don't think it's gyms, but... whatever, but you're fighting different trainers in different places that all have different teams, and you have to come up with your whole group, you know, and all of the cards that you're going to have in your deck. Like, if they did a Pokemon game that was based on, like, the Pokemon card game and had more tactics to it, I would probably mm-hmm. play the hell out of that.
Yeah.
So, I think that's what I want. I want something that's more tactical, and it's just, like, a mainline Pokemon is just not ever going to do that. So.
No. Oh, unless you get into competitive play, in which thing, you know, it's difficult and rigorous, but it comes down to grinding for EV values. That's an ATM machine thing. Grinding for EV, and then not EVs, the Pokemon.
yeah, that's the first thing in my mind. I was like, well.
grinding for those things. Or just, you know, doing the straight up bear like meta stuff, and never shall the two levels of difficulty meet. So
I mean, I'm still enjoying it, and I think I'm, you know, as they're fixing stuff in the patches, and you know, now that I have the traversal unlocked, I'm liking it more. So, you know, obviously, because I barreled through a whole lot of it, I don't know. It depends on what's in the DLC and everything as to whether or not it's going to get as much mileage for me as Sword and Shield did. But we will find out.
No. Cool. Did you have anything else?
That's it.
Cool. Let's see. I've got the sheet here. So now I can throw to folks.
I'd like to go, because I think the game that I'm talking about is kind of similar to Jala's. I think.
Yeah,
kind
of. go right ahead.
So I also only got one game this week. I've been playing Midnight Suns, the new Firaxis game. I kind of held off on getting it for like about a week or so to see what the reviews were like for it. And it had kind of gotten middling reviews, like kind of like B reviews. But I figured I'd try it anyway, since they're a pretty reputable game company. Mm-hmm. It's pretty good. I've played a whole bunch of it in the past week. I've enjoyed it a bunch. It is kind of, in a surprising way, it's given me what I expect out of Hogwarts Legacy, but it's a Marvel game and not a Harry Potter game. So to give a summary of what this game is for anyone who's not aware of it, this is from the people who made XCOM, Firaxis Studios. And this game is a Marvel game, so it's one of their first like licensed games. And basically it's similar to XCOM, but there's but it's a weird hybrid of XCOM and Slay the Spire, like deck building. You have all Marvel characters. The narrative of the story is kind of weak. You're not really there necessarily for the narrative. But you're playing a weird superhero from like the 1800s who's like dead in a coffin and is revived by the Marvel characters. And then you're like, have this mission that you're on. The story is like not the important part really. But the flow of the game is you kind of have this loop, this day night, mission loop that you're going through, similar to like how in XCOM you go out on a mission and then you do base management back and forth. You have a similar sort of thing here. You're at a place called the Abbey, which is this weird, it feels kind of like the X-Men like mansion that they live at, but it's something different. And you go out on missions, and similar to XCOM, where you have like three or four people in an area fighting one another, you have a team of three people that are all Marvel characters that are fighting in an arena. And then which characters you pick determine what cards you have in this deck. So each of your characters, you have to strictly make an 8-card deck for each of your individual characters. And so when you send them out on a mission, you have a 24-card deck. Mm-hmm. Among the three characters.
And there are no cards that you get access to only with certain combinations of characters?
You do get combo cards, but they're pretty generic. They're not hugely differentiated from one another.
Got it.
Okay. I might go into that a little bit more later. But the main difference between the combat in this and an XCOM, instead of it being like a lot of like shooting and percentage of hitting and cover sort of thing, here it's a lot more kind of like pinball or like a pool where you have a lot of cards that are like attack for this amount, but one of the most heavily used modifiers is a concept called knockback, where it's when you go and attack someone, some of the cards will knock them back in a direction and you can aim which way to knock them back. And so if you hit them against like an object, they'll take more damage. If you hit them against another bad guy, then you can possibly have them both take damage to one another and like kill one another. Later in the game, after you unlock some things, you can knock them into another superhero, and it actually is a reward. You're not hurting the superhero. It's like a alley-oop sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And you can like draw more cards off of it. The main mechanics of the game is, in XCOM, you have like two actions that you can do, and you pick what to do, and then you maybe have some like movement on top of that. The way it works is you can play three cards per round. You draw up to six every time. So if you have like 8 cards in your hand, you don't draw anything. If you have no cards in your hand, you draw up to six. You get 2 redraws per round, and you get 1 movement per round. And your movement you can go and like just get like a free knockback where you can run and punch someone with your movement and hit them into something. Mm-hmm. And so it's after you kind of get all those rules underway, you do have this little strategy where, you know, there's a certain number of enemies and you're trying to kill them all, because after you're done attacking, they'll all attack you. Most of them will telegraph who they're going to attack. Some of them, they just have a question mark. And so you kind of have to prepare for anything. But you can kind of use that to your advantage, where it's like, if you know one of your heroes is really weak, you can attack all the people who are planning on attacking that superhero to save them. But then there's kind of exceptions for every one of these rules, where it's like, there's a concept called taunt, where you can, change who a person's going to attack if you want to draw them away. There's a keyword called quick, where if you kill someone with a card, then it doesn't count as a card play for your 3 card plays during turn. So everything kind of has like an exception to it, and they do a good job of kind of making things more complex, and there's a lot of interesting integrations to it. For example, like some cards will get modifiers where if you reroll it, like you choose to discard that to draw something else, then a bonus effect happens when you do that. So it's like if you reroll it, you gain like 100 health or something like that. So it starts kind of like, it gives you like a lot of different options to kind of choose between to try and find like an optimal path.
It's at like the effects that you're talking about, not so much the card stuff, but really is giving me big... it's giving me real big Into the Breach vibes, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Especially with the emphasis on knockback.
Yeah. Well, and the knockback is cool because it's the like superhero battles are going to be more kinetic than XCOM battles are, you know, which rely on firefight stuff. Yeah.
And they do a good job splitting it up where each hero's moveset's kind of representative of them. So, for example, Blade is one of the heroes. He can shoot people from afar with, like, his guns, or he can hit them with a katana, depending upon what the card that you play is. Mm-hmm. And so that changes, you know, like, whether he'll run up to the person or if he keeps distance. So, honestly, the deck building part, like, you don't really see, like, a physical deck the entire time, and the game doesn't really try to lean into that as much. There's not many abilities where it's, like, place this on top of your deck, or, like, mill two cards, or something like that. Like, that's not in this game at all, which is fine. Like, it doesn't need to be. So the idea of, like, a physical deck is kind of, like, an afterthought, and is kind of, like, purposely, like, hidden from you. Instead, you're just focused on what, like, abilities you have in your hand and what you can do with them. I don't want to talk too much more about the combat besides that, other than saying that it's really well executed and like, it seems like they did take their time to like fine tune it and make it so there's a lot of options. I think one other thing to it is at the start of every round, in addition, so right after you've been attacked by the bad guys, also usually a set of like one or two lackeys will come in from the bad guys' side too. And what that does is that also gives you like fresh meat. So if you have cards that like reward you for killing things, those are usually like pretty easy targets for doing that. But it also just kind of like keeps the difficulty up. Like you basically need to slowly grind out process where it's like you need to kill the new people that just came in and then also put a little bit of a dent in the people who are remaining. I think the strategy that I've kind of leaned towards as the game has gone on is kind of working from the bottom up, where it's like you kill all the small, easy to kill things first, and then you slowly start going after the bigger and bigger things. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and then there's interesting synergies between character builds, where it's like Captain America, for example, is a very defensive build where he like shields and protects his allies, but has like really strong defense from a shield. Whereas like other characters, like maybe some of the X-Men, there's more aggressive ones where they can attack multiple things for a given ability. So it's interesting to play around with combinations there. And they do a good job of forcing you to play with each character, because whenever you go on a mission, there's a random character that you have to take on the mission typically. And then you can choose like two other people to compensate for it. As you go on missions with people, their abilities level up, but there is like a base level that everyone stays at, so you don't have to worry about people falling behind. Like, people will level up as your character levels up. It's just they lag maybe like 3 or 4 levels behind it, something like that. I'm not quite sure how it works. But outside of the combat, you have this weird like home base thing similar to the XCOM thing, that where you have this like base management system where you're at the Abbey, and the Abbey is broken up into two sections. You have a morning section and a night section. And so the morning's before you go on your mission, and then the night is afterwards. And you can do different things based on the day-night cycle. So in the daytime, basically all of your rooms are active and you can do things there. So similar to how they have things like the Foundry and like the research labs in XCOM, that's kind of what the mansion is during the daytime. You have a place where like Tony Stark and Doctor Strange, they make like basically like a foundry there that you can do research to unlock new abilities. But then you also have like a sparring grounds that Blade is at. And then you can do that to choose a person to spar with every day if you have money to do so. And so sparring kind of feeds into this system that they have, where you have like this weird like relationship mechanic with everyone at the game. It's not like Mass Effect. You can't sleep with anyone in the game, but it's like your friendship.
This is Marvel after all.
Yeah. But it's your friendship meter with all these people. And they do a lot.
Hey Ben, what you're describing is Marvel Persona.
Okay. I could believe it. I have not played the Persona game. So yeah, it could be ripping off that like wholesale and I wouldn't know it. Yeah, they have a lot of weird like integrations with that too. So like if you spar with them, you gain points with them. If you take them on missions, you gain points with them, like relationship points. And then they have this weird system where it's like in the evening time, you choose who do you want to hang out with. And so you can choose activities to hang out with people. And so it's this weird like dating simulator type thing where it's like, all right, I want to hang out with Blade. What does he want to do? Does he want to go on a walk around the house? Does he want to play cards, or does he want to watch a movie?
I mean,
it's just persona.
Right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. If he's walking, it depends on what time of day it is.
Yeah. Well, it's always at night is when you hang out with people, and he's a day walker. So yeah,
there we go.
He probably doesn't like that.
Thank you.
Yeah. And then as you like level up your friendships with people, they have like abilities that you get on the battlefield where it's like, it could be just random things, random buffs. And then, kind of what Dennis was talking about is depending upon who you're going with, you'll get these like duo cards in your deck where it'll be typically a high cost. It'll cost like 4 mana. But it'll do like a shit ton of damage. So basically like we'll one shot somebody on the battlefield. But both people who are on the card, like it might be like the main character in Iron Man, or it might be like Iron Man and Doctor Strange. But as long as both people are alive and not downed, then you can play the card.
Nice.
Yeah. And then on top of that, the other thing you can do at night is they have this entire grounds that you're on where this little mansion's on. And you can go explore them, and they're basically like ruins. And so there's like different abilities, like these like magic abilities you get that allow you to explore them further, which is like it's a cool system. The only like nitpick with it is it's not really gated very well, where it's like you can do like a fourth of everything you can do in a single night, and then you have to wait for something to unlock again, and then you can do another fourth of like everything. So you're doing a whole bunch in a single night. So it feels very imbalanced like that. But that's like a minor nitpick. The only other minor nitpick is the game takes a while to get into. Like the first hour or two is very, very dialogue heavy. And again, the story's fine, but it's not like, it's not the strongest of narratives. Like a lot of times you're skipping through dialogues, like and fast forwarding through them and just like reading them very quickly. What else to say about this game? Character customization is great in this game. I posted a picture in the notes of what my character looks like during the day. It's fantastic looking.
Wait. Do you get to do like an in costume and out of costume version of your character?
Yeah.
Oh,
you have your casual attire and you have your superhero costume, and you can be as serious or as flamboyant as you want with any of that.
Those are the two poles of that spectrum, by the way.
Yeah. Let's see, what else? There's also clubs that form with the groups. So it's like a weird nighttime activity. Again, this could be straight out of Persona, but it's like certain superheroes will like form like a book reading club or like a repair club where it's like you work on cars and stuff like that. And so you can spend evenings with different groups of characters doing that sort of thing.
I'm just imagining Thor in a book reading club.
Yeah, yeah. For the most part, the superhero characters, they did a good job of like interpreting each of them, where they're you're kind of unique interpretations to the game. They're not just like carbon copying what's in the movies or somewhere else. In particular, like the Logan is pretty well written, and that's like pretty true to the X-Men animated series from the 90s. So that was one that I at least was familiar enough that I could kind of gauge.
I had another friend who's playing this say, you know, they read the comic books as a kid and then kind of got away from it all. And playing this game actually had them go out to a store and buy comics because they're like, oh, right, there is Marvel beyond the movies, and this is what it's supposed to be like.
Yeah, and maybe that's like my thing is like I'm not into the whole like I don't know I'm not big into like it feels like it gets really weird when you go into like all the corners of the comic books where it's like it's kind of like the extended universe in like Star Wars or something where it's like there's not enough consistency there where it's like it kind of starts spiraling out of control where it's like, oh, okay, this is true and this is true and this is true, like, oh, there's this alien race and this alien race and this alien race, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So this has some of that in there. So that is kind of like, I don't know, you can take it or leave it depending upon how invested you are into that sort of thing. But in general,
if you hate the blockbuster for busterification of Marvel, it sounds like this might be an antidote.
Yeah. I mean, I think in general, this is just like a really fun game. The one difference between this and XCOM is there's not a lot of time pressure in this game like there is in XCOM. Whereas like in XCOM, it's like, you have like no room to breathe, right? And it's like very hard to make a mistake. Here, it kind of like lets you go at your own pace as far as advancing the story. Kind of similar to what you were talking about, Jella, this game has, it's more similar to Slay the Spire, where you have unlockable difficulties in the game. Mm-hmm. So you start off on normal. If you ever three-star a mission, which is the highest rating you get one, two, or three stars, it'll unlock the next difficulty up. And if you go there, people have more health, they do more damage, but you get more rewards for a given mission. Mm-hmm. And so basically you can go up until you're like, okay, this is about where I'm good. One minor nitpick is once you start a mission, you can't get out of it. So like, even if you fail it, your only option is to restart or reload a previous game, which is kind of brutal. So there's been a couple of times where I've had to replay missions like maybe three or four times before I got it.
You can't fail. The Avengers always win.
I guess that's a way to put it. Huh? Yeah, so that's what, you can kind of fall into a trap if you if maybe you push the difficulty too high and you get into like a sticky situation. But yeah, other than that, I think the fighting is really fine tuned and good. If you can like when I first started playing it, I just kind of grinded and did a bunch of the side missions before advancing the story to make sure I got like all the decks in a good place and like before going on with that. And then at this point, I'm kind of like beelining through the story because they don't really want to do that anymore. But they kind of gate you towards the end is before you do a story mission, you have to do one kind of side mission wherever you're at. But yeah, I think I've described a whole bunch of what the game's like. It's really, I like it a lot. I'm probably close to beating it. I think there's probably a couple of more hours in it, but I'll probably have it beat by next week. So
cool.
I mean, it sounds real cool. Yeah. I would really like to dig into it, but I'm like waiting for the 1 week of the year where I can play what I want, which is between Christmas and New Year.
That's your Christmas present. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say don't be, there is like some jank in this game, but that's not really why you're there, I guess. Like, so for example, like there's a time in the cutscene where you're walking to a mission or whatever, where they had like no clothes on the superhero. They just had like their boxer shorts on or whatever. It's like,
That's just funny.
Yeah. It's not, and like there's like small ones, like the audio will sometimes cut out on the in the mission, but it'll start back up at the next round. So it's like there's definitely some jank there, so maybe that's why people might have given it lower ratings. Maybe it's the lack of a compelling story, maybe is maybe why. But the game itself is fun, so those things don't really get in the way of the experience for me, at least. So
I mean, I am interested in it and just kind of, you know, broadly excited, kind of just because it's a way to do both tactical combat and have that also be you doing cool stuff with characters that I have some affection for.
Yeah.
Especially X-Men, which have not factored into like a lot of the like very heavily exploited, you know, kind of materials. Yeah.
Yeah. And then another minor nitpick again, because I really like this game. One thing I noticed is, so there's some like synergies with the decks, like, with an individual deck, where it's like you have some wiggle room with, you know, like how you build the deck for a single character. That said, there's not that much. There's not as much of a range there as there is in something like Slay the Spire. Mm-hmm. And that's diluted by the fact, too, that you have three other decks that you're working with. Yeah. Or two other decks that you're working with the characters. So you don't, there's not a lot of like high synergy builds that you can make so far that I've seen. That maybe might change if you unlock like your top tier cards for each character. But right now it's kind of like you kind of make a general deck for each individual person and they all like do their own thing. And
and
that gets more and more effective as the game goes on. So yeah.
I'm happy to hear you're digging it.
Yeah. Two thumbs up. Very good.
Cool.
That's all I got.
Cool. Dennis, round us out. What you been getting up to?
I've been playing another game with some jank to it. Ooh. This decidedly does not work. So just brace yourselves. I saw a trailer for a game called Gungrave Gore.
Yes. At least the name sounds awesome.
Yeah. And by the way, GORE is like an acronym, GORE.
Mm-hmm. The G stands for gore. Yeah. The O stands for, oh, that's gory. The R stands for really gory. And the E stands for enough gore already.
Yeah, that's about it. And what attracted me to it is like the tone of the trailer and the design of the main character looks like a cross between Devil May Cry and Bayonetta.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, on the surface level, like, great, sign me up. And then you get into the game. I played probably like 2.5 levels, 3 levels. And it is like someone's high school project, cheap ass knockoff of those games. That is just, man. Yeah. I'm going to struggle to find something good to say about the game. So, the main character is very much, in fact, like just a straight up a cross between Dante and Bayonetta. There's not really any background given for the story or who they are other than you're going after like drug kingpins, you know, just, okay. it's a generic drugs are bad drug called Seed. And you are angry at those people.
Okay.
Because they do drugs, I think. and it just in the way that Devil May Cry, and Bayonetta too, I'm not as familiar with Bayonetta, but is like crazy over the top, but it works. This is crazy over the top in like just a really trying too hard way. So for example, you know, there's probably 3 different bad guy character models that I've seen so far. And they all have some variants of a blue mohawk. And there are 3 total voice lines between those characters, which each line contains some variant of motherfucker. Like, okay. I'm going to get you, motherfucker, or where is that motherfucker? Or it's like, okay, we decided we're going to say it, so now we always have to be saying it. It's just, yeah.
I hope they're using the same motherfucker line from each one to each, and it's just,
yeah. Yeah, oh no, it's, there's one bad guy voice. Yeah, it's bad. Yeah. The gameplay, it's, you know, third person action, but it feels incredibly clunky. You can mash the trigger button to kind of shoot at the closest targeted person. And then if someone gets too close to you, you can, you know, mash circle to swing your melee weapon, which is, I don't know what I expected, a coffin.
Okay. So this is a sequel. Yeah.
What?
Okay. Yeah. So I was confused because the link to it links back to the original. But when I saw this gun, I was like, oh, I kind of remember that. Gungrave, the original one, was a character action game that was itself kind of a fast fall. I want to make sure I'm saying this right. That I get this right, because the order could matter. Came out around the same time as Devil May Cry. But yeah, no, this is like a PS2 a PS2 action game.
2002 kind of thing. For Gungrave.
Yeah, and then the original Devil May Cry, looking at the timeline. Yeah, 2001. So,
oh, wow, you know, yeah.
Fast follow, conversion evolution. I mean, based on what you're saying, the character feels very, yeah.
Yeah,
depends on how charitable you want to be.
If Gungrave was a fast follow of the original Devil May Cry, Gungrave Gore is a very slow follow of everything that Devil May Cry turned into.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just, it's mind boggling.
Yeah, it was just like, I remember like, just there were tons of used copies of this at the store, at the GameStop when I worked there. Uh-huh. And nobody seemed to like it. I remember getting really bad reviews. And so when I saw that was coming out, I figured it would be like a remake or something. I was like, oh, who has affection for Gungrave?
Yeah, not that I can tell.
Yeah.
And
the title art looks like it says Gungrave Gore.
Yes. Well, you know, you've got that, the soundtrack, which again, it's like, okay, Devil May Cry has the crazy heavy metal soundtrack and it works. This has something akin to that, and it just grates on me. And I don't like, it's just, It's like, who's the character from Super Troopers that like just always takes everything too far? Everyone, Farva or something like that?
Yeah. Oh, the guy who beats up the person because he doesn't have a liter of cola or whatever.
Yeah. I think yeah. Farva's right.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, we're going to do the meow game. And then he comes up. He's like, no, we're going to say chicken fucker as many times as we can. Yeah. It's like that. That's what Gungrave Gore is in relation to Devil May Cry. Unfortunately. So, you know, you've got your melee attacks. You've got some super attacks that you can charge up. The one interesting idea is that where in Devil May Cry, your combo meter really just counts towards your arbitrary kind of score at the end of the mission, how well you did. In Gungrave, once you get to the combo meter to certain thresholds, like 50-point combo, etc., it unlocks new moves that you can do.
Okay.
The problem is the one move that I saw in my time playing was you could mash one button while standing still, and he would kind of just generically shoot in every direction. Okay. And then just so after they introduced it, there would just be periodically moments where they go, they're coming from all directions. And then you would literally stand still. You couldn't move into it. You had to stand still and mash this button until you felt like you'd thinned everything out satisfactorily to move forward. So just completely mindless.
Did you pay money for this, or was this on Game Pass?
No, this was Game Pass.
Oh, good.
Okay. Thank God.
I was going to say.
I played it so you don't have to.
Okay. You got to throw that fish back. It's a bad fish.
It's a very bad fish. And then, you know, just to jump even further on it, it had the audio issues, similar to what Ben was describing. And I don't know if it's because I was playing it with cloud streaming. I've never had another game do this, though, so I think it was the game where everything would get like muffled and robot-y at random points, and then the music would like cut out. It felt like whenever they went to switch tracks, there was something wrong, and it just took a little too long to figure out where it wanted to go next.
Muffled and robot-y sounds like a streaming problem. The, like, trying to find the next track doesn't.
Yeah, and nothing in the gameplay or the responsiveness would have told me that there was a problem with the stream either. Mm. And like I said, I've never experienced a sound problem like that in any other xCloud streaming. So, my the sum of the other experiences tells me to blame it on Gungrave.
Probably. I mean, like poor optimization, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Maybe
it can just be bugs as well in a game.
True.
Yeah.
Somerville had that as well.
Sometimes a game can just suck.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you like had Gungrave posters up on your wall as a teenager, maybe go check this out. But otherwise, you can quite easily pass.
I got to tell you, I don't know what the odds are. Like we've got listeners. It's cool and nice. I mean, based on the probability, I don't know that the cohort of people who are listening to this are like clamoring for Gungrave.
No, I don't think so. Oh my. So
there are five Gungrave fans in the entire world. What's the chance?
One for each initial. No, there's four, one for each initial in Gore. Mm. It's Gary, oddly enough. Ryan, Robert, and Edgar.
God.
So yeah, I just saw Ben posted the title art for the game with the logo. And you mentioned it looks like Gungrave, right? Yeah. It's hilarious because there's like this giant elaborate G that both Gun and Grave kind of come off of. The Gun has its own G and the Grave uses the elaborate G, so just very confusing.
Yeah. So or is the actual title of the game Gun Grave Gore?
Yeah. Like yeah, in Devil May Cry you get the triple S if you do really well. This gives you the triple G.
Yeah,
it's hardly legible as being a G even though, like,
No.
The logo is indicative of the game, though. It is a mess. Yeah. It sounds like the game is a mess. So
yes, I can't wait for the DDR crossover Gun Rave Gore, though.
Oh man, yeah, that sounds like it sucks.
Yeah, I mean, it was so bad, it was funny, really. So
yeah,
glad to share that with you. The other new thing I've been playing was announced at the Game Awards. Which is Vampire Survivors Mobile.
Hmm.
So downloaded the app and booted up on my phone. And guys, this is Vampire Survivors. Who knew?
Just expressed on a phone?
expressed on a platform. Phone. There are some mandatory options, changes you're going to have to make, though, to get the most out of it. The first one is set it to landscape.
Okay.
The game, I guess, boots up in portrait.
Ugh.
And it does not shift to a landscape when you turn your phone. So it's like it's locked, whatever you have it in. But even more weird is you have to pick, do you want it in landscape left or landscape right?
Oh, for the active area for your, what's going to be your thumbstick?
But like, so let's say you sit down with your phone sideways and turn it 180 degrees. 99.9% of apps, it'll just rotate to whatever is up, right?
Okay.
This will stay locked to whatever landscape you choose, left or right.
Look, they're making it for Dracula, who might be upside down at the time, and they don't want it to auto adjust, right?
Oh my god.
That is, you know what, you cracked it. You did it.
It's the most elegant design I've ever heard of. It's amazing. But anyway, so lock it to whatever landscape you prefer. And then the other thing you're going to want to do is make sure that the visible thumbstick shows up. Because by default, you just tap and then drag like you're moving a thumbstick, but it doesn't show you a visualization of it on the screen anywhere. And what that made me realize is Vampire Survivors is actually way more reliant on precise controls than I realized.
Yeah.
And so being able to not just kind of keep in mind where you put down your thumb, but actually see a little thumbstick icon where you put down your thumb and know exactly where you are in relation to that is really important to keeping the game playing smoothly. So
yeah.
Do those two things and your experience will be indistinguishable from what you do on PC. The one, I guess, free-to-play or mobile concession that I've seen is when you die and then when you get to like the run review screen. When you die, I saw an option to watch a video ad to get a free revive. And then on the review screen, you have the option to watch a video ad to get an extra like 500 gold or something like that.
Mm.
Which is, you know, a non-trivial amount.
Is it a free download on the mobile? Is this why?
It's free. Yeah, it's free on mobile. So I guess this is their way to try to recoup the costs of that. So yeah, I can't blame them. It's free. And like I said, you know, once you set it up right, it feels just like playing on anything else.
Is there a paid app option where you can just pay like $3 and not have any ads?
I don't know. I didn't even look for it. I didn't see one. And I know the big thing that they touted when they debuted at the Game Awards was that it was free.
Okay.
So you have to remember that charging people for a product is not how you make money. giving you money, no, you don't want that to happen. not for the thing that they made that you made that they are consuming.
Yeah, if they're giving you money, they can't be your product to sell to someone else.
Yeah.
But yeah, whatever. It's good. It is a nice cool down game when I am, you know, not ready to fall asleep yet, but I'm too sleepy to continue doing something as intensive as like Magic the Gathering Arena, so that it's filling that niche nicely.
That's exactly the niche that it filled for me before I decided I had to stop playing.
yep.
Yeah, it's very interesting to hear you say that, because comports with my experience of the game precisely.
Well, and it's dangerous too, because levels are time-based, so you get going and it's like, well, I guess I'm in for a half hour until this level's over.
Yeah.
Or you die.
Or you die.
Just like in life.
how's the performance?
I haven't noticed a hitch, and I've gotten to some pretty hairy screens. I think particularly when I won the second level, it was one of those times where just like every square inch of the screen was filled with pixels. And I was at the center just wondering how everything was getting, you know, warded off before it got to me, because everything that was not me was monster.
Yeah.
So and no problems whatsoever.
I still see a function for this, like on the Switch. Like, I think this is a good like airplane game or something where it can just kind of melt time away.
Sure, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Didn't even try it on portrait, but I did have some other friends kind of slander that and say just it feels wrong. So maybe it's fine, maybe not.
I mean, realistically, you're not moving left and right more than you're moving up and down. You know what? Here's why it feels wrong. All of the sprites are human proportion. Yeah. So they're taller than they are wide, which means that you're seeing, you know, fewer enemies, let's say, is what it would feel like. Yeah.
Yeah. That actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's Vampire Survivals Mobile. Survivor. I keep on wanting to say Vampire Survivals. But it's Survivors, and it's on mobile.
And Jala, you were saying you got the confused with Vampire Savior Darkstalkers?
Yeah, so like every single time I hear it, I'm still just like, I know now that it is a different thing, but at the same time, I'm just like, yeah, I automatically still think of Vampire Savior, so.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, I mean, we've talked about Vampire Survivor a lot, so I don't know that I have other questions other than just how it performs for you.
Sure. My final one is just a quick update from the land of Modern Combat 2, specifically from the DMZ mode. And I managed to have fun with proxy chat again.
I mean, the last time people were shouting slurs at you, so...
Yeah, it's weird. I feel like the longer... the game has been out, and I, you know, this is all relative. It's been out for what, 2 weeks? But I feel like there's a curve that the just the heinous screaming is kind of falling off while the interesting fun stuff is staying there.
Okay.
And so literally just earlier today I was playing and I was playing in a three stack. Three people I knew were on the team. And we come across an enemy that is a real player. We kind of start, you know, shooting at him, and we hear, wait, stop. And we're like, hello? He's like, I'm alone. It's just me. There's no one else on my team. I'm just trying to get out. Like, oh. Oh, okay. We're over here doing it was like a radioactive materials mission. He's like, yeah, I just want to go through. I won't give you any trouble. I promise.
It's a trap. Oh, and God.
No. He walked out. He put away his weapon. He was standing in the middle of open space. We're like all, you know, hunkered around him, and we're like, okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. See ya. He's like, see you guys. And I just as a joke, I was like, but you have to throw all your money on the ground.
Okay.
And he actually did it.
You're a robber, Dennis.
And then I felt bad.
This is like Rounders. When you can't spot the toxic player at the table, you are the toxic player.
we're like, no. Pick it back up. So he got his money back. I just couldn't believe he actually did it. Like, can we shake people down in this game? And then we waved, he waved, and we went our separate ways, and everyone was happier.
That's like some DayZ shit.
it was delightful. Like, we were laughing about it the rest of the match. And you know, actually that round ended where we went to Xfil and there was people camping it that killed us, and we're on the ground like, wait, no, just let us on. And they did not extend us the courtesy that we extended the other guy. But you know what? I like to think that the other guy, the singleton that we let live, made it out. And that gives me a little bit of catharsis for that round.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's a fun story.
I really, really hope that trend continues, where like proxy chat becomes what it was meant to be instead of just a forum for verbal abuse. Like, you know, verbal abuse can only stay funny for so long. Then this other stuff is just more interesting.
Yeah.
So that's me.
Nice. Well, I mean, that's everybody, I think. So it's a segment.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it, because this will be the last of the regular multiplayers of the year. I asked, what is your personal game in the year? Not game of the year, game in the year, the asterisk. being that it doesn't need to be a game that released in 2022, but the best game you played for the first time in the year. And I also threw in this other one, which is, we're going to assume Elden Ring, like, like if Elden Ring is your one of these, not because it's like the best thing, I can't presume that, just knowing our audience, have a backup.
It's like going into the Bengals locker room and asking them who their favorite football team is. Like, no, they don't have to say it, but you kind of know what people are going to say.
I'm not going to kick them off the team for...
Yeah.
So I'm going to get started here with David, who says Outer Wilds easy. I have never played anything like it. On my first loop, I went into the Dark Bramble and encountered, you know what, back to my ship into a wall, damaging it, and narrowly escaped. I then flew to the Giant's Deep with my heart still pounding, and while on the planet's orbit, I exited to repair my ship, only to be pulled into the planet and fall into a tornado hell ocean. As soon as I hit the water, I paused the game and quit. 10 out of 10 game, seriously, though.
I gotta play this game.
Outer Wilds is very good. Just be wary of motion sickness. No,
It is not the Outer Worlds. That's what I always get confused on.
Right. Yes.
Outer Wilds is the one I need.
Let's see. Jala, what does Ollie say?
Ollie says, I have played a lot of good games for the first time this year, and I'd like to give some kudos to a couple of obvious ones and maybe a less obvious one. One. God of War 2018. Incredible game. So much better than I expected. This should be the gold standard in how to update a game. 2. The Evil Within 2. 2017 question mark? I loved it. Absolutely loved it. If you are a survival horror fan, I can't recommend it enough. It just feels right. Scary, tense, funny when it needs to be, and narratively rich. And 3. Diablo 2. 2000. Ollie don't grind, and Ollie don't understand the appeal of clicking a billion times and looting everything that looks like a box. And yet, Ollie played the hell out of this 22-year-old game and had a massive smile on his face the entire time.
I want to know if Ollie soloed or Ollie played with friends.
They put out like that re-release here recently, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which I only mentioned because that would make it easier to... That would make it easier to play with friends. So
yeah, or was there random matchmaking in that?
I can't recall. I know there were servers and stuff, but
yeah, I would bet there was. Huh. Yeah. Good stuff.
Let's see, Ben, what does Brian say?
Brian says, not words. It's a great word puzzle game that I've not been able to stop playing all year. I'm at a 230-day streak on my daily puzzles, basically since the game released. I also want to shout out Chained Echoes. Which I haven't played enough of to grant Game of the Year status, but I'm falling head over heels for. It's a modern retro JRPG with maybe my favorite combat in any game in the genre since Final Fantasy X, and has so much charm of the Final Fantasy VI Chrono Trigger era of games, with really smart and modern conveniences like auto-full healing after every single battle, and fast travel.
Yeah, those would both be welcome changes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and not if words. A JRPG doesn't have the bullshit, is it really a JRPG?
You're getting into like a Ship of Theseus kind of thing on that. Like if you cut away all the annoying features, yeah. Yeah, not words is good. That's a fun mobile game. It's like a micro crossword kind of deals. Yeah. Let's see. Dennis, what does Eli say?
Eli says, well, I technically played this game last year, but then it crashed while I was saving and erased all my saves. Then later I started again back in February and got yet another game breaking bug after an interaction with a much more lovely bug. But then I played it again and even beat it on my birthday. And so many of my friends turned into my stream of the end. So yes, I'm going to say my game of the year 2022 is, what game could carry that? Disco Elysium.
Yep.
Even though it burned me so bad twice, it's actually that good.
Yeah.
All right.
Disco Elysium's good enough. By which I mean one of the best games ever made. So there we go. Chris has one that I wish that I had played already. But they say, I actually have them from this year. Yay. Burnhouse Lane, the new one from Harvester, the makers of The Cat Lady. Once again, they perfectly mix making me want to cry and laugh. The writing is as good as ever, and their visuals are even better than usual. Yeah, no, I love that developer. Cat Lady and Lorelei are both amazing, and I want to see this one. I didn't realize they were making a new one, so when I saw that it was out, I was like, "Well, shit!"
Nice little gift.
Yeah. Jala, what does Callum say?
Callum says, "Horizon Forbidden West. It took the core gameplay that I enjoyed from the first game, removed the loot box rubbish from the previous game, made the crafting system make sense." and encouraged engagement in the robot hunting for parts. The combat system was also improved and encouraged use of a wide variety of weapons and status effects.
That is a game that was totally buried by the fact that it was released just a week before Elden Ring. Probably one of the biggest strays anybody in the industry ever caught. Probably.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The list that Callum gives is like all the things that needed improvement from the first one. So like the first one was freaking fantastic. And if you can improve on the small problems with the first one, then great.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we'll see. They just announced a DLC for that too, so maybe that'll be a kind of a chance for a second, or a chance for a reevaluation. Yeah,
yeah.
Scholar
of the first sin, if you will.
Yeah, Ben, what does Phil say?
Phil says fox emoji.
Think Phil is referring to Tunic?
Yes. Yeah, confirmed in later comments, but yes.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Simple enough. Dennis, what does David say?
David says Vampire Survivors, non-Elden Ring division champ.
Vampire Survivor was actually kind of close to being mine in terms of just like, oh yeah, this is compulsive. But it's kind of the Frostpunk problem or the Satisfactory problem. Like Frostpunk is a bad example. It is the Power Wash Simulator problem. Compulsive does not necessarily equal good. So just like, okay, this scratch is a very particular itch for me, but yeah.
We'll talk about that more in the end boss.
Yeah. Rookie says, if David is on the episode, the Stanley Parable Ultra Deluxe Edition, play it completely straight. if he isn't, the Return of the Obra Dinn was the best game that I played this year. Hell yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a good game. I need to play the Golden Idol.
It's also a good troll.
Oh, yeah.
It's a very, very good troll. Yeah. Well, like, that's not just a re-release either. Like, that could plausibly be an answer. The new content on that's very good. Yeah. Let's see. I did meet Jala. What does Nicholas say?
Nicholas says, Luca, Born of a Dream. One of the most personal, surreal, and visceral video game experiences I've had in quite some time.
Nice. I'm curious about that one as well. Has a very distinct visuals. And my understanding, it's like a Souls-like kind of thing, but lo-fi. Yeah. Ben, what does Grizz say?
Grizz says, It Takes Two. While not having an amazing story, the creativity in the levels is amazing. It has one of the most creative environments I've seen since Rayman Origins/Legends.
If you're grading just on play, yes, It Takes Two is very good.
I mean, that's what got a Game of the Year, I think, last year. So,
did it get Game of the Year, really?
I thought Game Awards, I believe it did, yeah.
Oh, that's some chicanery. It got
a Game Award.
It won the Game Award, yeah. I didn't mean for that to be an Italian joke. Oh, man. Dennis, what does Greg say?
Greg says, never played Elden Ring, so there. I've not played a lot of games this year due to how busy I was moving, help taking care of my sick dad, etc. But the two games I did play beat this year that I enjoyed most was Hades and The Outer Worlds.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
The Outer Worlds, not The Outer Wilds.
We got so both.
Each one is recommended. Oh, see, now I'm going to get confused. Damn it.
Well, that's okay. You can just play both.
Yeah, I guess so. But how will I know which one I'm playing?
I imagine it would say on the system they're spelled and pronounced differently.
I'm always gonna be paranoid about it.
Yeah, I can't help you with that. That's yeah.
Sounds like a you problem.
I specifically avoided saying that. Sean says, the game that brought me the biggest smile, that brought the biggest smile to my face this year, and I enjoyed the most was Return to Monkey Island. Guybrush Threepwood is one of my all-time favorite characters, and it was a joy to play as him once again. That's another one that I need to dive into. One of the reasons I asked this question is I never end up playing a game the year in which it came out. So like game of the year discussions are kind of alienating because where do people get time to play all these? However, I like hearing people basically, yeah, you get the reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's see. This will be me, right? I believe,
we
yes.
We just did you.
We just did me. Well, that's a problem then, because then we, and now it's you. Hey, Jala, okay. What's Rick say?
Rick says, this is my favorite kind of game of the year list. This year, I played through Xenosaga Episode 1 for the first time, and it's everything I could have wanted in a JRPG. The writing team of Takahashi and Saga seems to check every box for me. I also want to shout out the visual novel The House in Fata Morgana. It's far and away the most well-written and engaging visual novel I've read yet, but it is a novel after all, so honorable mention only.
Yeah, I need to play that. That looks really, really good. Ben, what does Jeremy say?
Jeremy says, personal favorite of the year, Ghost of Tsushima, for the combat mechanic and also the story. Special shout out for the best co-op I played in years. It Takes Two. Perfect game to play with your significant other.
Nice.
You can murder an elephant together.
as it begs for mercy. So fucked up. For mine, I don't know why anybody, why did nobody mention Elden Ring? It's a huge game. Like it was real big. It was in all the I'm gonna have to go, like, it's gonna be a split between Scorn and Signalis, just in terms of being
feels like recency bias right there.
It feels a little bit like recency bias. I also thought about throwing in Inscription, because that was like probably my favorite new thing that we covered on WoF this year. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but just both Scorn and Signalis are like straight up my alley in pretty similar ways, actually, in terms of being kind of throwback survival horror games that are also aesthetic triumphs, you know, with interesting stories and or worlds. You know, yeah. So I'm gonna give split duty to both of those. Sorry, that's a cop out, but
all good. It's fine. We make the rules here. We can decide to do that.
Yeah, Jala, how about you?
So this is a weird year for me because I haven't been playing as many video games this year, and like I have like all the games that I've been playing, unless I started them before this year. I just could, like, none of them have been just like, oh boy, I am so excited about this game that I just played, really. I mean, I played the Ace Attorney games 2 and 3 this year, and so that took up a large chunk of time, but I can't really say that those are my favorite Ace Attorney games. So,
right.
I mean, like, I liked the Great Ace Attorney Chronicles and the first Ace Attorney better overall than the other two. So there was that, and then I don't know about the best thing I could say, because a lot of stuff just kind of fell flat or was like meh or mixed. Mm-hmm. You know, like I did Bloodstained when I was sick with COVID and all of that, and that was fine, but it just made me want to go play Symphony of the Night.
Yeah.
Like that, I can't really call that one. Oh boy, that was my favorite. So Simulacra Pipe Dreams, the weird 1.5 installment between Simulacra, mm-hmm. the first one, and the second one, that's the found phone murder mystery type game. Pipe Dreams in particular, because the English is cleaned up and it finds its footing in terms of humor and some other aspects. And so I like that little 0.5 installment a lot. Mm-hmm. I did start Simulacra 2, but I haven't actually finished it. Like, I started it, but then I got busy and I just haven't gotten back to it. But Simulacra 3 just came out this year.
Oh, wow. So
eventually I will play that as well. So that's what I've got.
It's like fighting the mighty Hydra. They keep on popping up faster than you can get through them. Yeah. Yeah. Not every year can be a winner.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Ben, how about you?
Yeah, I was so happy you asked this question, because the favorite game that I played this year was Deathloop, and that came out last year. And so that is a good answer for me.
Deathloop's a good game. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, for me, it has to be Slay the Spire, specifically the mobile port.
Okay.
This was like my first year really being in the stay-at-home dad life. mm-hmm. and like, you know, going on walks, pushing a stroller and having that out, or, you know, being able to play that at the gym on a treadmill or any of that stuff. Like, that just defined the year. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and then add on top of this,
ooh,
yeah. That's the Slay the Spire music, by the way.
Oh, okay. No, no idea.
To show how much I like this game, I'm going to play it in the background.
For that's right.
That was me. I was pulling it up to look at it.
Oh, sorry. It was the Slay the Spire music. Yeah. Which is really funny because as my game of or game in the year, I actually have listened to virtually none of the music because it's always played on silent. Yeah. But yeah, it's just been a constant companion and you know, just have had a really fun little community form around it. And it's just, yeah, that's an easy, easy answer for me.
Nice. Well, thanks everybody for sharing. Like I really enjoyed hearing about this stuff because I don't know, game of the year stuff always ends up being all the big names, but you get cool smaller things thrown in. Mm-hmm. on something like this. So I appreciate everybody participating. Multiplayer will be back in the new year. So if you want to participate, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. Watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things happening in the world of video games around us, oftentimes that are exciting to us. I've got one, the kind of the announcement that has seemed to make at least our cohort most happy from the Game Awards. There is going to be a new From Software game. They announced that this wasn't a surprise that they were making this. We knew that there was going to be a new Armored Core game, but it is official. It is Armored Core 6, Fires of Rubicon. Is what that's called. I have no idea what that name means. I imagine Rubicon, it is something that can catch fire, is my guess. They showed a trailer which had all of the cool stuff you would expect to see in Armored Core. Armored Core being the old series of mecha games that FromSoft used to make. Big robots, destroyed cities, blasted landscapes, very, very large, bigger than multiple buildings robot bosses that you're fighting and stuff. It's coming out in 2023, and kind of the thing that has come out in interviews is that they are going to be kind of sticking to the old style of Armored Core kind of combat and feel, which is weightier, chunkier, much more dependent on kind of range combat, missiles and such, as opposed to doing something which I think some people expected, which was taking basically the Souls interaction model and kind of applying it here. They're saying, no, this is going to be an Armored Core game for people who like Armored Core, and hopefully more people will like Armored Core after this comes out and they play it. So it's been neat to see people being excited about this because Armored Core games used to always be such a nothing, but FromSoft has built up this reputation as being so good that the series is going to get this other, it's going to get a bunch more eyes on it. Yeah.
It looks sweet.
It does. I'm happy they're keeping it their own thing because we already have Souls and Elden Ring. You know?
Yeah, when it said like "let the last cinders burn," I was like, "Oh shit, another Dark Souls game."
That had to be this. That was a very good fake out. Yeah, is what they
good had. Troll, good troll.
Oh my gosh, Ben, what is happening with a game that
I have this story, but before I do that, I want to do a brief Game Awards like recap. If you guys had any opinions about the show or if you watched the show or anything, if there's
I didn't watch it. I was doing other stuff. So
yeah. Go ahead.
Did you look up the results afterwards then, I take it? Or were not interested?
I just kind of not interested. I know Elden Ring won Game of the Year, which mm-hmm. isn't that huge of a surprise, but I only know that because of these stories about the InfoWars kid getting up there and making just basically storming the stage and making an anti-Semitic joke before being hauled off and arrested.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's it.
That part was weird. Yeah. I was going to say I was really disappointed Stray got best indie game, since there were so many other games that were better that came out, I thought, at least. But
yeah, yeah.
People, they do be loving them cats.
This was not an award show. This was a trailer show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think on that front, it delivered for me.
Yeah, you know? I think that's fair. All right. All right. Yeah. All right, cool. All right. I wasn't sure if anyone had thoughts about it, but I thought it was somewhat big, so I thought I would at least touch on it.
Yeah.
Story I brought to the table was that Hogwarts Legacy, the PS4 and Xbox whatever versions of it are being delayed a couple of months for release. So they're being delayed till April, and the Switch version's being delayed to like June or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it's just those. The regular game still has the release date, I think, in February sometime. So I thought this was an interesting story because this is basically how you should handle a situation like Cyberpunk, I would guess. I think people are probably learning from that experience, and I think probably more and more people are getting a chance to get their hands on like current gen consoles now. So it seems like this is kind of a smarter way to do things, so that there's not as much blowback when the game comes out. I imagine it is probably very unpleasant, though, if you have like a pre-order or something like that for something like PS4 and having that kind of be pushed back on you. But
it's hard for me to look past what game it is. I agree with you. Like, this is a very good decision for a large studio to make, as opposed to, you know, risk having a game tainted by a bad launch. Is just, you know, I kind of can't have anything to do with the boy wizard at this point.
I think the company is like saying that J.K. Rowling doesn't have anything to do with the game. So I think they're kind of like trying to step out in front of that sort of sentiment.
Yeah. That's a conversation for a different time.
Sure.
Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, at a certain point, having her work and her ideology kind of fade is more important to me than, you know, whatever this game could offer.
But it is a good way, you know, just like, yeah, don't even try to put out something broken, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just from a PR standpoint more than anything. Let's see. Dennis, how about you? Got anything going on?
Well, we talked about compelling not being the same thing as good, and I think there's a case study in that just happened. So, the game is Brawl Stars. It's by Supercell. It's kind of their take on a MOBA game, and it had your typical free-to-play loot boxes in it for the longest time. But they just announced that they're going to pull those out in favor of more deterministic rewards or more rewards that players have agency over. However, instead of celebrating, players are angry. And they say, oh, there's no point in playing anymore. It's not going to be as much fun. Proving out that, hey, what you're after is actually that dopamine squirt from gambling and not necessarily anything related to the game. So this reminded me of a study that showed that like the hardcore addicted slot machine gamblers actually get annoyed when they win because it breaks their flow.
Not what are joking, we doing like, here? What you, are we yeah, doing?
you get into like this flow state of like, I pull the lever and the wheels spin and I pull the lever and the wheels spin.
Only throwback ones have levers.
Where I push the button and the wheels spin. The digital screen shows wheels spinning in a simulated way.
It's the, it was a popular video that went around, or GIF, but just a row of old people sitting, just tapping the tapping the button like they were playing Mario Party. Bleak.
So some background, they have things called like slot tournaments where like people do that, what you're talking about, and whoever quote unquote wins the most amount of money in a certain amount of time, like wins, where they're not actually betting on each play.
Christ. Oh, okay.
This is all dumb shit that I learned while working on this stuff. I don't like any of it, but
so you know, that dopamine squirt is what loot boxes prey on. And I think that's been obvious from a common sense perspective from a long time. but that's the kind of starting to get the recognition and understanding that it deserves. Which you could say, like, that's why all the companies are moving away from it, is they see the writing on the wall. They know that governments are finally catching on that this is just gambling. Mm-hmm. And so it'll fade. Then, you know, that's something to be happy about. But it's crazy to just see it laid out so plainly that, hey, here's a company moving away from it, and the players are mad that they are getting a more ethical system.
You got to rip that Band-Aid off, though. I hope they don't back out.
No, I don't think they will, because, as I said, I think really what's motivating it is they see the writing on the wall from a legislation standpoint.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't know. Yeah. It's one of those things. Do you really want to fan around if all they like is the gambling part of it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, good for them.
Mm-hmm.
I got nothing.
Atta girl. No, we knew that ahead of time. I just, it's always fun to ask, and then here I got nothing, and then I say atta boy / girl. Yeah. How do y'all feel about bunding it up?
I feel buttons.
But credit. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this episode of The Level, episode number 439. It's been a good time. Thanks for hopping on, Jala. The big thing I want you to do, if you're listening to this on the week, on the day or the weekend that this comes out, come on over to twitch.tv/duckfeedtv or duckfeed.tv/duckstream. Watch us. We're streaming for 48 hours. It's a whole big deal. Portland has taken the nights from 9 p.m. to 9 a.m. And then I'm going to be doing the days alongside. We're going to have multiplayer blocks. We're going to have a multiplayer with, I believe, the three of. Yeah, no, the. What?
Two,
no, the
four sets of four? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. two sets of four. Yeah, sorry. But yeah, no, 6 p.m. Eastern on Saturday, and then 1 p.m. Eastern on Sunday. Tune in, and we'll have like a little schedule thing there for you, but just multiplayer stuff. And I mean, it is an open thing. If any of you want to come on, I've got stuff on the sheet that's for two people or three people or stuff. So or just, you know, chat. But yeah, it should be a good time. It'll be a good show, raising money for the Transactive Ginger Project out of the Lewis and Clark College. It is a group that that provides education and resources for trans youth, their parents, their family and their community, like their schools and stuff. It is a more important cause than ever. And so dig deep if you can. If you can't, signal boost, hang out in the chat, and spread the word. Cool. Am I forgetting anything? I don't want to do like personal podcast promotion stuff. Am I forgetting anything, or does anybody want to get in and promote theirs? Jala, what's happening on Jala? Jala Chan's place.
Yay! There we go. Well, I already mentioned it earlier in the episode. The next episode that comes out on December 23rd will be with Will Hughes from Everything to Guppy, and we are going to be talking about Agatha Christie and Hercule Poirot and Murder on the Orient Express. So that's what's coming out then. But in the meantime, focus on Duckstream and pay attention to that and do the thing. I will be in there as much as I can when I'm not actually gaming. So
yes. Yeah. Dennis, anything with Deck of Wonders?
No, look for people actually playing it in the wild soon.
Yeah.
Woo.
Fantastic. Got anything you want to promote, Ben?
There's a dark beer festival in Seattle this weekend, so cool. I will be doing that before Duckfest.
Ooh, neat.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I've been Cole Ross. You can watch me on Duckstream at Duckfeed TV on Twitch.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can negotiate with me in Warzone, and I'm sure we can come to an equitable solution.
Bring a protection racket. Don't run a protection racket on my show. We talked about this. Yeah. Jala.
I'm Jalaton in places, anywhere that I can be found, with the exception of the Duckstream event, where I will mostly be hanging out in voice chat with Cole. Cool.
So. I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles.
Drop my balls.
Pretty good.
Save a soundbite of that, please.
Oh, man. What are your others? Read them out.
Pro-jank.
Pro-jank? Cool.
I only put this one because it's going to be an A-toady ass as a sorting measure.
Okay.
And Marvel persona.
Oh, man. If we named an episode that, then it would become real. And I don't know if I could be responsible for that. Let's see here. Dennis, what you got?
Yeah, I've got Straight Out of Persona.
Okay.
Which is in reference to Marvel Persona, but stylized as Straight Out of Compton.
Okay. Here, I'll write it down. We're still trying to figure out how to use this new thing.
Yeah, I remember previously, like, it's more fun if we hide it from everyone, and then
yes, and sure. I didn't tell Jella that.
Oh no, okay, yeah. No, that's my only one.
Today, I wouldn't have gone to the trouble of putting it on a different screen anyway. So
yeah, you have another one?
Nope, that's the one that I got.
Okay, Ben, how about you?
G stands for gore. And then this is what I just wrote down because I thought it was funny when Dennis was talking about them fighting drug users, but Gungrave GOP.
two vile things.
Oh, yeah. Goodness.
I have Remember you're an American. I've got It's How Dracula Plays. Yeah. I also have Pretty Hairy Screens.
What's that from?
You were talking about Vampire Survivors when I was asking about the performance, yeah. And you said, "Oh, I've been to some pretty hairy screens," and I got an intrusive thought about hair growing out of my iPhone screen.
Oh no!
Yeah, that's
good. Thanks for that mental image, Cole.
Drop my balls is real funny.
Yeah. For drop my balls. That's
pretty yeah. Good. Yeah, let's do that. The only the other one by laughs was It's How Dracula Plays.
that one's more the in the context.
Yes. Yeah. Drop my balls. There we go.
It's very funny because none of us had overlap this time.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Weird.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes that happens.
Drop my balls is even funnier in brackets. How you start those.
that's what I do. You know, on the old documents that I made, that's how I marked the one that I knew we chose. So I know which one we chose without having to go back and listen again, and B, so I can find them and remove them when I'm making the A-toady list.
Yeah, I. By the way, I think. Cole's article, I was served an ad with a title that gave Gungrave Gore a run for its money. You can see it on my notes, but cave to digger, dig to harder.
That is no, that's pretty bad.
That's a lot.
Cool. All right. I will get you all a list of stuff that I feel pretty confident, you know, we can do. Or at least just stuff to have installed, I guess.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk. I'll throw that stuff in the backstage chat before Saturday.
Cool.
Yeah.
Sweet. Cool. All right.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah. Oh wait, I need to say it is decided.